Listening to KBOO.FM, Cable Community Radio 90.7 FM. This is Culture in Motion. I'm your host, Mike Crenshaw. This is a show where we talk about the intersection between art, culture, politics, music, and activism. How you guys doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, it's hot up here in Portland, so we're kind of, and you're in what, LA, Curtis?
Yeah, I'm down in LA.
How's the weather?
The weather? I don't know. I haven't been outside my house in weeks. It's sunny.
Sure.
So, Curtis, you're a stand-up comic. What else would you describe yourself as in your elevator pitch?
Yes, I guess stand-up comic. I've done some writing. I've pretended to know how to act before, but mostly just stand up.
Right on. So I'm curious, Ryan, you being a stand-up comic, I'd love for you to lead the interview because you and Curtis are coming from the same kind of professional environment. Y'all know more about y'all's skills.
Well, Curtis is like 20 steps above me in the whole stand-up thing. He's the guy I go to and ask for questions about writing and things like that. He's a legit pro, and one of my favorite comics from the Portland area and moved out of here. I was fortunate enough to be on an open mic with him last year, pre-COVID, of course, and at the local comedy club, and just was reminded about how great he is. And what else have you written on, Curtis? Like, you've written on some Comedy Central stuff, like what?
Well, shit, man. First, thank you for the kind words. Those are very sweet of you. But you know, I think you overestimated me a little bit. Every time we talk, I email you. Hey, just so you know, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. So there's that. But I've gotten a chance to do some things for Comedy Central. I had a stand-up set through them, and that was a fun experience at Clusterfest. And then wrote for the season 5 of Crank Angers, which came out pre-COVID.
Awesome. So it's been like a big upheaval in the COVID was a big upheaval in the stand-up world, of course. I don't think anybody's under the assumption that things are going to go back to normal immediately quick. As per COVID, I think, more per what we speak of though often on the show is like, I'm kind of curious as, somebody who's worked in a major media outlet like Comedy Central and things like that. How do you feel like the George Floyd situation and the wide attention to that is going to affect writing and what they're looking for and things moving forward?
Not to be a grump, but I don't have any particularly high hopes that we're going to see a major change and a push for diversity. I think that we are seeing some, though not enough, legal and policy changes because of the rioting and the protests, and I'm very happy about that. But after what I want to say is 3 to 4 years of the Me Too movement, I don't know that we've seen industry leaders take a particular interest in showcasing female writers or women's voices outside of perhaps a little bit of lip service and an additional character here or there, which, I guess is still technically progress, but I mean, that's women, and women are most people, and they're still being treated that way. So I don't have a lot of faith that white-run, multi-million-dollar media companies are gonna change their perspectives for us.
Man, that's, I really can relate to what you're talking about, Curtis. And there's part of my heart that's a dreamer that wants to think that we will finally move with some type of momentum towards something different. But I was raised in an environment where, people get upset. And then after they get upset and express themselves, it's right back to the status quo. And I think what I would like to ask both of us, both of you to do is just think out loud, like what do we envision happening? Like if we're more on the pessimistic side of things, what do we think it's gonna look like a year or two from now? And if we're more on the hopeful side of things, what would we like to see a year or two from now?
Curtis.
Yeah, I'll field it. I'll take it. Wow. I guess, I mean, on the pessimistic side of things, I would think that we probably get a lot more of the same thing I think we've been seeing over the last few years. So I think that there, over the last decade, has been a big push to showcase Black nerds and a big push to make Black people the boss of the show or the captain of the police unit. And that way they're in a position of power, but you still never have to see them on the show. I know that there have definitely been better examples of diversity. I mean, I think the big example that sticks out in my mind is like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and stuff like that. You know, I'm hoping that we continue to generate kid content so that this next generation can normalize different races on screen. But in terms of adult television, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
It is sort of like a unicorn in the skill and the writing that are going into it, and in TV in general, just not with you know from that angle. It's just kind of it's like no other show I've seen, really. So I mean, I would have high hopes that more of that, and like you said, with the success of it, that they could find those writers and they can find those people out there. So yeah, in a you know, it seemed like as a kid there were shows with like, you know, folks on it, you know what I mean? And then like, you know, and I know when Bernie Mac died and that show ended, that it was like there was no Black main character on any of the four major networks, I think, until Tracy Jordan came along, or Tracy Morgan came along. You know, so I don't know if it's that networks are afraid or what it is about it, or if it's still just that what makes people comfortable, or I don't know. It's a bizarre, it's hard to be optimistic about it from like my standpoint. I mean, I think in comedy, and I mean, I think Curtis can attest to this too. I mean, we are seeing a drift away. I mean, I know in the Portland scene, like, you know, a lot of like misogynistic and racist comedy and stuff like that doesn't fly. And would you agree with that, Curtis?
I just have been on Twitter for the last 3 days and I'm like, sure, I don't want to be on a podcast to talk about anything. No, I mean, I think you bring up a lot of good points. I real quick just want to jump in something that you made me think about when you were talking about kind of the unicorns of these great Black shows, is that I actually think that maybe I've been so indoctrinated into thinking that they're rare that I miss or I forget a lot of them that continue to exist. Like, I've been hearing a lot about this I May Destroy You from the woman who made this show called Chewing Gum. Like, I think there are a lot of Black creators out there making really innovative and special things. And I guess one of the big kind of questions and concerns I have about people wanting to move forward in the industry is if, is that like, it seems like it'll be a step towards progress for us to not expect Black excellence and instead just be able to accept Black regular amount of talent. And I'm not sure what that means or what it's gonna do.
Like Scandal or How to Get Away with Murder.
I haven't seen those shows. I mean, yeah. But even then, I mean, the network shows with leading Black women is as ridiculous as it is in 2020, still relatively radical.
Yep.
I guess what I don't want is 100 Black CSIs. But I feel like when we have that, we'll have arrived. I don't really know where I'm at with this.
So,
but with the women thing, I think that part of what we're seeing is that maybe, because I really can't speak to that the same way that I feel like I can speak to race, but it does seem more and more like there are pockets of comedy like that in Portland, like certain aspects of LA comedy, like anywhere where any scene kind of fractions off, but that those pockets are still not necessarily being championed by the industry, which I think is slowly changing. I've been hearing that a little, that more and more women are being are working their way to positions of power, both on the Hollywood side and on the club management thing. So we'll see what happens.
We're gonna have to look forward to interviewing some women comics in the weeks to come.
Yeah.
Curtis, are you born and raised in Portland?
No, I'm from a small town called Auburn Township, Ohio. Did comedy in Cleveland for a couple of years and then moved to Portland for a while before coming down here when my wife got into grad school.
Okay. And then, you know, with the racial demographic of where you're from in Ohio, was it very similar to what you found in Portland or a lot different?
Oddly enough, probably pretty similar. It's a white, like, rural suburb. I would, like, describe it like my town is probably the last town where you're going to see a McDonald's for a while on a road trip.
Wow.
And they're for a series of historic reasons that have been discussed by people more understanding of Cleveland history than I. There ended up being kind of a small Black community in the area, which is unusual for more rural areas. So kind of similar to Portland, there was a sectioned off quadrant for diversity, and nobody really liked them. And then everything else was white as hell.
It's funny because I once did a show at Wright State University in outside of Dayton, where I met Dave Chappelle's mom. She was head of the department that brought us out. And I just recently watched 846, which he filmed somewhere in Ohio. And you know, Ohio is so middle American and Portland is so white, but I think that there's definitely being smack dab in the middle of the Midwest, you know, Ohio is closer to the Great Migration and has a larger Black population. But I think when we all, you know, all three of us having spent time in Portland, Oregon, where we're broadcasting from, it's a predominantly white city, but I think the demographics here probably reflect more what the studio executive culture in Hollywood looks like. And I'm always trying to grapple with, you know, the limitations that could put on art that isn't made by white people for a white audience. And how when we look at, you know, whether they're female or male, people of color or white, when we look at comedians, often we see the same kind of jokes. White people do this, Black people do that, often based on racial stereotypes. And so I say all that to say that when I watch your bit that Ryan shared with me about how to score coke at an art gallery, and you talked about meeting your girlfriend's dad, I loved how intellectual it was. Like the amount of thinking that you're able to fit shows us that you're not really trying to dumb down yourself to reach an audience.
Oh man, that's really nice of you to say. Thanks for watching the video, man. That's cool. I appreciate that. I guess something that I've been wrestling with in terms of my stage like persona and presence is that I think a lot of it, at least in the beginning when I was first starting to do mics out of college, was rooted in this feeling that I needed to prove or to show these otherwise ignorant people who might have a schema for what Black comedy is, that it can be, I don't know what the word even is, that it can use 10-cent words and appeal to different kinds of people. And I don't know, I don't know. I feel like maybe I more recently have been reflecting on how my desire to do that or the need I felt to point that out to people is still rooted in trying to prove that Black people can do something as simple as think to an audience that doesn't expect it from us. And that's not great still. And this has been bumming me out to realize how much of what I've been doing has been rooted in just quietly trying to get people to consider me worthy. And I don't know. I mean, I've been super now, I've been like way more recently into the history of like Pygmy Markham and like Rudy Ray Moore and people who like decidedly refused to cross over. And there's some a power to that that I don't have access to, but that I've been appreciating more and more in this time. Ugh, sorry, I've been talking a lot, guys.
That's great, man.
That's why you're here. Appreciate it, man. That, you know, it's seldom do we get to talk to people that we see on Comedy Central in a candid way. You know, it's like, you know, we get to see performances, but seldom do we actually get to talk about, you know, what goes on in a person's consciousness outside of the performance. So we appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's cool to get to meet and talk to you guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'd like to see, you know, I mean, as a comedian and watching comedian and people say that comedy is like the last real honest and all of this, it, this stuff, it would be, it's funny how much of that stuff is still at play, you know, and how you bring that up and how like, you know, like, and I really appreciate this, the subject matter, because it really shows like, you know, because, you know, I spoke about this last week on the program, the thing that I worry about is burnout and like, you know, people are focused on the cops and all that stuff is great and needs to be focused on. And, you know, people have been involved in, you know, sort of politics for a long time, or like, you know, people have been saying this since the beginning of time, need this energy right now to push it. But it just shows like the real work that needs to be done. And I hope that this, you know, like conversations like this are now like maybe some more people are listening, you know what I mean? And I think that's probably as positive as I'm going to get in the situation, you know what I mean? Because I usually get let down by that sort of thing, but it would be nice, like artists and people could perform and just do that. And maybe I'm just a sucker for that, but I don't, you know, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that. But yeah.
Okay. I think you're right. It would be nice. I think it's a little tricky. I don't know what your guys' experiences are in your communities, but I feel like anytime I get an email or an invitation to a Black-oriented anything, if it's an art gallery or a comedy show or just a gathering of like-minded people to discuss issues, there's always like a huge bolded all capitalized note at the bottom that's like, this is a Black-oriented event, but it is not just for Black people. Please, dear God, come if you're white or if you're Latino, we want you here. And then it ends up being almost all Black people because there's still this discomfort in being among the minorities. And I think that with stand-up, which is so strictly based in having an audience or a crowd, I don't know, it just seems like so many things about stand-up strictly rely on the performer because you're one person on stage. But in terms of like desegregating comedy nights, it always seems like there's a Black Attack Tuesday or something, and otherwise it's all white people. Like, we can't seem to quite understand how to be together in a group. And that, I think, bothers me a little more than what people have to say on stage sometimes. Does that make sense? I don't know if I just ran.
That makes complete sense.
It makes a lot of sense, and I reflect on it all the time, you know, because being a Black man that grew up in the Midwest as well as the Pacific Northwest, and that's traveled not only around the United States but the globe, it occurred to me that the ways that I was taught to behave, i.e. this is how Black people act and this is how white people act, are actually so limited that they don't begin to encompass the full potential of how any individual would express themselves. You know, it's like, what do you have to say for Black people that never lived in the United States but actually speak four languages? You know, which if a Black person that grew up in Africa can speak French and three African languages, are they acting white when they speak French? You know what I mean? It's absurd. And I think that so much of what we experience in the United States gets forced into a binary that it's actually That's the root cause of the discomfort, where we can't even sit in a room and laugh together because we're so afraid to challenge the boxes that have been forced on us, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I think it speaks to some of the anxieties we were talking about with what comes next after all this is people, I mean, I guess especially on the Hollywood side of things, we're expecting people who only know archetypes to figure out racial dynamics. And so the more Black people that speak French that are on TV and are successful, they now have a check mark for that. And so, you know, we're just trying to widen the gap so that, and this is not to discredit these gentlemen, but so that it doesn't have to always be Bernie Mac or Donald Glover, but there can be like a whole mess of kinds of people as there is with whiteness.
Right.
Right. Right.
You got anything coming up?
No, you know darn well I do not.
Is anybody working? I mean,
what about online for our listeners? If people want to check you out, where can they know more about you online?
You can find me being reckless on Twitter at Curtis_Cook. On Instagram at Curtis Cook Comedy. Promise I do not always talk like I'm answering an essay question. A lot going on right now, and I just wanted to be like as clear and positive as I could be.
That's great, man.
Yeah, Curtis, can we ask you to, for this last couple of minutes, could you please sound a little less intelligent for us?
Yeah, man, all day. what's up?
I appreciate you making time for us. You keeping yourself sane anyway? You got anything like a routine or anything you're working on?
This is for not the radio now, right?
Yeah, we can cut to the radio.
Not yet. We got about 3 more minutes of no 7 words.
Gotcha. All right. I've been trying to write more. I've been trying to do like scripts and stuff because I was working on stand up and I was like, let me write these premises down so when the time comes, I'll have something. And honestly, I spent like 3 pages writing about how I was like pretty sure because we were all in quarantine, police brutality was going to go down. And then they started killing people and I was like, oh, this is the fastest a joke has ever been ruined for me.
You know, it's funny. Here's the weird part: is like I actually laughed at that. I found a punchline in there, and there's really nothing funny about it.
It's just so grim right now. I'm nervous, man. I'm like, when we all get out of this, it's gonna be like a year and a half of everyone's just like, remember when everyone had a Tinder joke? It's just gonna be that quarantine, and I'm terrified.
I actually advertised my comedy as Tinder joke free. I decided when I got into it, I was just not going to do it. You know, I was just like not going to do it. But yeah, you're right. Like, what are going to be the worst? The COVID jokes or the try to make attempts at making light of the situation? You know, it's like as somebody who writes satire, you know, my pitches lately with hard times and stuff like that, it's hard to find that balance between like making a comfortable joke that's like backhanded about the situation but not making light of it, you know what I mean, and finding that balance in there, you know. And it's it really puts the writing chops to the test because you gotta and it's also, you know, I mean, it's like, it's kind of like, you know, and I think satire is an important political statement, but it, for me, it's also like, it's kind of hard to be funny, you know what I mean? Right now, when you see what's going on, you know, and I'm like, it's like, I love the vehicle of it, but I want it to be, you know, like it's hard for me to create at that level right now, you know?
I'm sorry that it's been a struggle creatively, but I like that it's happening.
Sure.
I think that for the last like 30 years, people have been talking about comedy like it's ever done anything for anyone. And I like that now people are kind of realizing like it is a fun vehicle by which to entertain the people who are actually doing things, but it clearly hasn't stopped any bad things from happening.
Right.
And I like that people are being able to just enjoy it or enjoy the process of creating it, as opposed to pretending that like George Carlin is the reason we have freedom or something. Like,
sure, totally.
But also, Hard Times has been going hard, man. That you guys,
we have been going hard,
nailing it. Yeah.
So, has anybody like looked into the term Tinder and where it came from? Because growing up, I listened to Too Short, and that was what Too Short referred to women as in his songs. And I was like, did they really name a dating app after that?
It's a good question. I think it's just a fire. But...
This is the first I'm hearing of that.
Well, go back and listen to some old Too Short. And then...
I don't think I've ever heard anything other than Blow the Whistle.
Okay, I guess I'm dating myself. I got a timestamp on me because I grew up back when Too Short was underground, you know, and it's...
Oh.
Yeah, and that was some good... I mean, it was really like, for my generation, it was hip-hop Rudy Ray Moore, you know? It was hip-hop Blowfly because he was taking it there with the obscenity. So it was funny, you know, but it was street and it was raw, and he combined a lot of different elements of underground culture, but albeit misogynist, you know? So I guess I don't, you know, I'm not a comedian, I'm a hip-hop artist, but I can relate when I see parallels between trying to survive in a chosen trade that has a commercial side and that has an underground side. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Me?
Yeah. Either Ryan or Curtis.
Yeah, go quick.
I like that. So I go and I ramble, and then Ryan comes in and is like, here's a well-thought-out thing I just said 2 minutes ago. No, I get that. I mean, it's... I don't know that, like, I don't want to front. There's hip-hop that I enjoy, but that's about the extent of it. I don't know that much about the culture.
Right.
The parallels that I've seen are like, you know, I think a lot of... I mean... This is exactly how you know I don't know that much about hip hop, is that these are going to be my examples. I know a lot of people like Drake. I don't know a lot of hip hop heads who particularly respect him as a creator. And I think it works that way a lot with stand up. I know I'm not going to say any names now because it's my industry, but I know a lot of people who listen to and support comics that then I don't know any comics who are like, that person is good and contributes well. So, right. I don't know. I guess you're always trying to bridge. Well, I don't know anymore. I feel like at this point, I'm kind of done bridging that gap. I would like to continue making enough money for rent. And other than that, I'm fine.
Sure.
But I don't know. I mean, I think other people who aspire to be like, to sell out stadiums and things like that, I don't know what you do. And I don't know how you, I mean, same with hip hop, maybe. I don't know. But like, how do you maintain such a constant social relevance when things change so quickly, and what's most popular is so often incredibly wrong and damaging.
Right.
You're kind of constantly chasing this beast that ends up stabbing you in the back 2 years later when the rest of the world figures out it was actually really wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I also don't know, man. No one ever. I don't have an option. No one was like, you can either be kind of a middling comic some people have heard of, or you can be famous. And I boldly chose middling. I don't know.
Right. Right. That note.
I'll tell you what. You know, on the hip hop side of things, I've never been more relevant than now. But because I chose to speak about the social issues that I reflect on in my music, it's taken me 30 years for people to catch up. And, you know, now is my time. But, you know, we do what we love because we love it. And it's cool if we happen to get wealthy by doing what we love, that's cool. But we have to understand that getting to do what we love is part of what makes us wealthy, you know? And as long as I'm motivated, as long as you guys are motivated to do what you do, then we're gonna keep doing it, you know?
But see, man, what you cut out there, and that was beautiful, but what you left out is the seething, growing bitterness in your heart as worse people get more successful than you.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, but luckily, I'm not a 24-year-old, so the amount of testosterone that might have fueled my bitterness is just not there.
That's the best way to think of aging. I'm running out of hormones, can't be mad no more.
Right? That'll be the hook for my next song. I'm out of hormones, I can't be mad. Hey, it's been good talking to you both, man. Thanks for co-hosting, Ryan.
Oh, absolutely. And Curtis, thanks so much for making the time and the insights, and I appreciate it, and I wish you the best, and I can't wait to see you out there.
Hey, thanks for... Oh, wait, you're about to move out?
No, I'm just saying, I just can't wait to see you out back out in the
Yeah, back at you, man. I'm excited for when the world reopens and we can get back to trying to be funny together. But thank you guys so much for having me. This was a treat, and it was good talking to you.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. All right. Take care, everybody. Talk next week.
Bye.
Peace.
Listening to KBOO Portland.